Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spirit of America Party and the Spirit of America Party book. I don't know how great the spirit is. I think we're in a little bit of trouble. And I wonder if we're going to recover. You know, this is like a bad hurricane. It's a moral hurricane. It's really sad. And it's got a cost. It's got a cost. Oh, man, give me a break here. Okay, so now looking over the field, there's a couple of things going on. Harvard is having a satanic mass tonight that they're going to worship the devil. And, yeah, most of the guys are going there to looking to tag the devilettes. Yeah, this is better than a buffalo hunt. Yeah, they'll join anything, these guys. What, devil worship? Yeah, does it pay off? Oh, yeah, pays off in buckets. Yeah, I'm joining. I'm in. Count me in. Yeah, if it was worshiping a can of baked beans, they'd go. They thought they could score. All the romantics. Yeah. Love is gone. You can't find love in college. No, all you can find is a checkup. It's really sad. I don't want to bring any bad news to you tonight because you're probably depressed and you haven't gotten your prescription medicine or your glaucoma cure. So, being that we're talking about dope, we'll kick the gong around.
Down in Chinatown, all the cookies laid around. Some were high and some were mighty low. Counting millions on the floor when a knock came on the door. And there stood old Smokey Joe. He was sweating cold and pale. He was looking for his trail. He was broken, all his junk ran out. As he stood and looked around, nobody made a sound, and then you'd hear old Smokey shout. Tell me, where is Minnie?
Where is Minnie?
Oh, I want my little Minnie.
You want Minnie?
Has she been here, kicking the gong around? If you don't know, gets her pleasure kicking the gong around. Giddy widdy liddy wall, liddy widdy liddy wall, giddy liddy 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 liddy. The curtains parted.
The curtains parted.
And there was Minnie kicking the gong
gong is probably an opium pipe. Opium's been around a long time. Mao Zedong was growing it in 1928 to bring to the United States. All the drug routes through South America were created by Russians and Chinese. But you don't know that because you're living in the wrong channel. Yeah, you're living in the wrong channel, man. You have no idea what's happening until it's all over and you go, what happened, man? Why am I on this truck? Where am I going? Here's a tune about smuggling in Irish guns so that they could defeat the British. You won't understand it, but it's a pretty tune. It's called The Lonely Bannerstrand. The Bannerstrand is a body of water and a town where 20,000 German rifles during World War I was smuggled in to Ireland by a guy named Sir Roger Casement. I might be wrong, but he could have been a Protestant because he had a title, Sir Roger Casement. And he was tried and hanged. And when he was disembarking from the ship to check out the situation, he knew already at that time that his cover had been blown and the mission had been compromised. And that's what happens. Guys like Snowden, who tells you that they're releasing secrets to the world for free speech, they get a lot of people killed. I don't know how many he's killed so far, but I'll bet you it's over 100. It's on Good Friday morning. North of Ireland, there was a parish that had a priest in it. I think the town was Arklow. And they had a priest in it, and he was a pacifist. And the British were coming, and he told his parish to turn in their arms and to just be law-abiding. And when the British arrived, they killed his parish. And as a result of that, his name was Father Michael Murphy. He turned rebel, and he led the people of Wexford to overthrow the British yoke. At that time, the British were using Hessians to subdue the Irish, just like the British used Hessians to subdue the Americans. It was Hessians that Washington caught with their pants down in Trenton. You know, the crossing the Delaware? Those were all Hessians who got caught flat-footed. So we're going to give you a boulevard. Father Murphy didn't make it to victory. He was captured by the British, and they put him in a barrel, and they covered him with tar and set his head on fire. And that's the price of freedom that some people pay, like our boys that are humping it over in Afghanistan and coming out of Kuwait and they're in Djibouti. And Obama is now playing a tin soldier in Nigeria. He's going to bring peace to Nigeria in his world conquest of Al-Qaeda. He has him on the run. He got bin Laden. He only gave bin Laden 4 months to escape, and then he was forced to kill bin Laden. He really didn't want to do it. It's not good for the Muslim Brotherhood. So here's Bull of Vogue and a tribute to the men of Wexford, Ireland, and Father Michael Murphy, who will open up heaven to all his men.
At Bull of Vogue, as the sun was setting, or the bright May meadows of Shemmelhill, a rebel hand set the heather blazing and brought the neighbors from far and near. Then Father Murphy of old Kilcornock put up the rock with a warning cry. Arm, arm, he cried, for I've come to lead you, for Ireland's freedom will fight or die. Led us on against the coming soldiers and the cowardly old men we put to flight. Was that the harrow the boys of Wexford showed Bookie's regiment how men could fight? Look out for hirelings, King George of England. Search every kingdom where breathe the slave. For Father Murphy of County Wexford sweeps o'er the land like a mighty wave. We took Camolin and Enniscorthy and Wexford storming drove out the foe. 'Twas Ashley Wiltshire our pipes were reeking with the crimson stream of beaten yoke. At Tavernearing and Ballyellis, full many a session lay in his gold. Our Father Murphy had aid come over, the green flag floated from shore to shore. Vinegar Hill or the Pleasant Lady, our heroes vainly stood back to back, and the yeoman at Tullow took Father Murphy and burned his body upon the rack. God grant you glory, brave Father Murphy, and open heaven to all your men. For the cause that call you may call tomorrow in another fight for the
Father Murphy was captured at Vinegar Hill, and then he was executed. on 137th Street and Amsterdam Avenue, that's also known in New York as Vinegar Hill, because the Irish were the first ones into Harlem. And they named Vinegar Hill after that famous battle. The Irish Echo newspaper's headquarters are at 125th Street, I think, on Broadway. That is the heart of Harlem. And I can remember going to high school, riding the Amsterdam Avenue bus down to 155th Street on Amsterdam Avenue and seeing all the bars full of black guys with shamrocks in the windows. How's that? You like that? That's a little bit of Trivial Pursuit. Now, the Irish were the first slaves. They were captured in 1600, sold into slavery. The first 30,000 Irish slaves went to the Caribbean. And there was a guy named Oliver Cromwell. He hated the Catholics, burned all their churches, and sold their people into slavery, took all their land. And that's where indentured servitude began. You could sign a contract for 7 years and work as a slave, and then you could get your freedom. But that's a little game. Every time you get uppity, they add another year to your indentured servitude. But in the Caribbean, there were the first slaves that went in there, or some of the first slaves that went in there, were 30,000 Irish. Men, women, and children. That's why you have guys like in South America, Bernardo O'Higgins, and a lot of blacks in the Caribbean have Irish names. Because eventually they became owners. And down in New Orleans, when they were digging canals, they would hire the Irish over the blacks because the blacks were too valuable to lose in mosquito-infested swamps. It was cheaper to lose an Irishman than a black slave. Interesting, huh? What kind of reparations are we going to get? Potatoes? We've had potatoes. So here's a guy gets off the boat. He was hunted in his own country as a rebel, and he goes and he joins the U.S. military and goes down south to fight other rebels. And if the boat landed in New York, he was a bluebelly. And if the boat landed in Atlanta or a southern port, he was a rebel.
Came like a banshee on the wind, and the smoke will have spaghetti's bird, many a mother wept.
Memorial Day is coming up. Less than half of 1% of the country stands and protects it. Everybody else takes it for granted that we are, as the communists will tell us, we're the strongest nation on the face of the earth. Al Gore told me that, along with Joe Liebowitz, when they were running for president just before 9/11. They danced on the party platform, inviting death. Never get too cocky, because one day you may have to eat your words. So, Memorial Day is coming, and the communists are calling our veterans crazy, gun nuts, and terrorists. And that's the picture that's being painted across the country in all the universities, in all the colleges, all the high schools, that you got to keep an eye on the veterans because they're crazy. Let me tell you, if you went to a foreign land to protect your home and you were stabbed in the back 100 times, you'd be crazy too by the people back home. Remember, the Congress and the Senate that now sits in power were the same people that spit on returning GIs from Vietnam. Let's take a look at Chuck Schumer's war record. Let's take a look at Carlos the Jekyll Levin's war record. If you want to see something funny, take a look at Senator Blumenthal from Connecticut's war record. He told everybody he was a Vietnam warrior, and he was attorney general up there, you know, like Eric Holder is the top attorney general in the country, who's doing nothing but killing America. Blumenthal, the warrior, managed to get into the Marine Corps and do nothing. And then he told everybody he was a NOM hero, combat hero. He probably went out and bought all the badges at the badge store. And he got caught as attorney general. So what did the communist state of Connecticut do? The home of Nathan Hale. They turned around and they made him a senator. And you had a draft-dodging president that stalled his draft and then ended up in London smoking weed and growing a beard, became a hippie, and he was standing and demonstrating against the war in Nam. And the reason he was against the war in Nam is because he might have to go and fight in it. Al Gore went to Nam. He had 5 bodyguards and a 50-caliber typewriter. He was a correspondent. The guy on MSNBC, he pulled a real beauty. The guy that has the dog leg? Chris Matthews, Rasmanjani. He joined the Peace Corps, and he was decorated by Jimmy Carter for his guacamole dip. And, of course, Jimmy gave everybody a pardon. Anybody that stabbed their country in the back, they got a pardon. He pardoned President Pinocchio Pants while he was giving away the Panama Canal and abandoning an American fortress in Iran and let all those guys rot for, 440 days or something? Jimmy Carter, the roving communist ambassador. So, being that Memorial Day is coming up and the guys who are worth their salt 10 times over and should all be getting a 40% pay increase, along with their wives being allowed to go to the commissary once a month and get free stuff in 10 trips. Yeah, those guys. The guys that count, the guys that are coming back, still missing legs. After 11 years, they're still losing legs to IEDs. We can't find one IED pre-locator and detonator. You know why we can't? Because not everybody's losing their legs. If everybody was losing their legs to tomorrow we would have an IED pre-detonator. We'd have the latest state of the art. But who cares about a half of 1%? Probably from small towns across the country, you know? Make them stand in line at the VA. Say they've been there before, they just don't remember it. Yeah, that's how we treat our wounded. Yeah. And what's even worse, we leave them on the battlefield to die. Yep. And Democrats will get you into war, and they will always leave you on the battlefield to die. So, this Memorial Day, we're going to play a tribute to the faded coat of blue and to the 911 relatives and family who are being pushed around by this communist mayor who is trying to bury the bones of the murdered by Muslims 3,200 American victims. And they were all Americans that day that died. They died in our arms, and they were Americans. Even if they came from another country, that day they died as Americans. And we revere them, and we pray for them in real prayers, not phony moments of silence, loud prayers, so Jesus can hear us and hear our cry. And may they get the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier for their families. And that's what they want, and that's what they should have. So I'm going to play a faded coat of blue about a young man who gave his life for this country.
In a lonely grave unknown lies the heart that beats so true. He sank faint and hungry among the famished brave, and they laid him sad and lonely within his nameless grave. No. In thy grave unknown, I'll find him and know him among the good and true. When a robe of white is given for the faded coat of blue. Cried, give me water and just a little crumb, and my mother, she will bless you through all the years to come. Oh, tell my sweet sister, so gentle, good and true, that I'll meet her up in heaven in my faded coat of blue. No more the bugle calls the weary one. Rest, noble spirit, in thy grave unknown. I'll find you and know you among the good and true. When a robe of white is given for a faded coat of blue. long, long years have vanished, and though he comes no more, yet my heart with startling beat, with each footfall at my door, I gaze over the hill where he waved a last adieu, but no gallant lad I see in his faded coat of blue. No more the bugle calls the weary one. Rest, noble spirit, in thy grave unknown. I'll find you and know you among the good and true. When a robe of white is given,
and now, in honor of those wonderful warriors who put their bodies and souls on the line to keep us free, us who don't appreciate it, I will play a tune that has been passed down from generation to generation.
Oh,
a couple of deeply religious Muslims took a truck into the World Trade Center, a garage, in 1993 during the reign of President Pinocchio Pants, and they blew up the World Trade Center. But they only killed a few and wounded less than 100. They didn't have enough explosives. So President Pinocchio Pants was made aware of who the bad guys were, and he decided to kick the can down the road until he was out of office, like Hillary's blood clot. Kick the can down the road till you're out of office. The end result was the people who brought the bomb in the first place, they went back to work and they practiced their art. And eventually what happened was they came back. And this time their goal was 100,000 Americans who should have been at work that day. But instead, they only got 3,200, including 200 pro-life mothers with their pro-life children. And those names should be on that monument also. Every family member who lost a pregnant daughter or daughter-in-law should name the fetus, or as I call them, Junior and Sis. Communists use the word fetus. Yeah. Like Hitler used the word final solution. And those children should be on that monument wall who died with their mothers. It should be the mother's name and the child's name. And then maybe some people can get final consolation for their loss of their national treasure. I hate it when the communists talk about blood and treasure. All they do is loot the treasury, and they have no idea of the cost of freedom because they expect somebody else to pay the bill. So, along comes George Bush. He's sitting in a classroom in Florida reading stories to little children, and Andy Carr whispers in his ear, "We're Phuket. The world is crashing. In New York City, people are jumping out of the tower windows. People with no hope. People who will either be burned alive or splatter on the street hoping that somebody will find their remains. Chop meat in a suit. Falling on people that are down below. And a giant cloud comes over the land. And everybody is running and crying and screaming. And they're all calling on God to save them." And that was the beginning of 9-1-1, part two. Clinton had part one and did nothing but bullshit the people, which seems to be the Democrat way. So, everybody turned around, especially the communists in New York, and they accused, under the leadership of Hillary Bloodclot Clinton, and they accused Bush of knowing everything. What did he know, and when did he know it? And here's Bush. He doesn't know whether to go back to Washington, D.C., hide out in the air, or go to an Air Force base in Nebraska and wait out the results. Dick Cheney is in Washington trying to keep it all together. Nobody knows what's happening. Everybody's waiting for the second strike. They can't believe that just two towers are going down tonight. The entire world is put on notice. Do not send planes to the United States. The skies are empty. The only thing in the sky tonight are stars. And it was a sleepless night in New York. And the one guy who was a construction worker gets a call from his sister. Her husband is a fireman, and they just found his hat. He goes down to the dig site to dig for the body of his brother-in-law. The smoke is rising in the sky like a Holocaust sacrifice. DNA dust is rising up in the air. It is foggy. While he's digging, he looks up. He can't believe his eyes. He sees the ghost of his brother-in-law. And he hears the ghost of his brother-in-law saying, "Tommy?" And he goes, "John, is that you?" He says, "Tommy, they're all gone." The only survivor. Somebody took his hat to jump on the truck. The only survivor. A fire captain had to give, I forget how many eulogies. All he was doing was going from one church to another. My parish lost 47 Americans that day. All their names are on a flag on the side of the wall of the church. One church lost so many that the Monsignor had a breakdown. He couldn't handle it. In the meantime, all the communists who sell this country out every day wanted to know what Bush knew and when did he know it. Led by Hillary Clinton, who can't account for four Americans. And not only that, one of the first casualties was a priest named Father Michael Judge. He was the chaplain for the fire department. The first thing that the communists did was smear him, calling him a homosexual. He was carried out by firemen. I think somebody fell on him from the towers, and he died. So he was a Franciscan priest, and they were lined up the following day to pay their respects. All the firemen, many coming from the dig site in work clothes, they were all lined up on the street to pay their respects to the funeral of Father Michael Judge, and a CNN truck pulls up, and who jumps out but Hillary Clinton. And she stuck her hand, being filmed, she stuck her hand out and shook the hand of all the firemen. You had to see the looks of disgust on their face. And one of them turned his back on her. And she was making hay the day after 9-1-1, political hay. And you're going to let this woman become president? You're going to let Hollywood elect your leaders? Hollywood that never had any skin in the game? They don't even go and visit the troops. The last guy that really had a program to visit the troops was Bob Hope. They don't do that anymore. But you can get a chaplain for an atheist. What does the atheist do? He goes into the no church, an empty room. You don't need a chaplain. He doesn't believe in anything. Just put him in an empty room by himself. There you go. Do your thing. So there we were on 9-1-1. Nobody could guarantee our safety. Nobody. The ship that should have been in the harbor with a 450-mile radar sweep was the USS Normandy. Chuck Schumer sent it to Virginia, said we didn't need it up in Staten Island. That ship was the sister ship of the Vincennes. The Vincennes shot down an Iranian airliner that had violated protective space for an aircraft carrier. And they called the sailors murderers. But nobody ever thought that perhaps the pilot was the first jihadi, a suicide bomber. No, it didn't enter our minds until we seen two planes coming down the Hudson River, shouting Allahu Akbar. Deeply religious Muslims, the highest order of martyr, getting the greatest reward in paradise for what they were about to do. Deeply religious Muslims. but you're not allowed to say that because you're under suspicion. So there we were on 9. Nobody could guarantee our safety in the entire world. They scrambled 2 jet fighters to come up to New York from Washington, D.C. They got jet fighters down in Egg Harbor, New Jersey. They had to scramble them from Washington, D.C. They met out at sea off the coast of New York. They were unarmed. They didn't have a firecracker. That's how ready we were. We were not ready. George Patton says twice in his lifetime he saw the U.S. come from behind. He does not believe, and he did not believe, that we could recover from a third attack. Not the way missiles can arrive in the United States so quickly. And now they don't even have to come from overseas. You can use drones right here in town. And you can direct them from a neighborhood rooftop. We're not ready for anything. In the 50s, kids practiced nuclear duck and cover. Today, the only practice they're getting is lockdowns in case somebody comes in to kill them. We're not ready for anything, and we're going to pay a terrible price. And the weapons are so sophisticated, there will not be time to bury the dead, and they'll all be bulldozed. And we're not ready for anything. So when Saddam Hussein bravely said that he had weapons of mass destruction, including nukes, what, you think Bush was going to roll the dice on maybe he doesn't? You think he was going to roll the dice on maybe he's moved them already and the Russians helped them move him into Syria? You don't think they're in Syria? You think Syria has given up all their weapons of mass destruction? Did Saddam Hussein's cousin or uncle, Chemical Ali, did he wipe out 5,000 Kurds with sarin gas? That's not a weapon of mass destruction. Afghanis were training with chemical warfare, making poisons in drugstores in Afghanistan, coming out with red hands. We weren't ready for anything. We didn't know anything. We didn't even know who Osama bin Laden was. Because blame and deflect is a Democrat tactic that they have mastered. When if you're looking for who killed the 4 in Benghazi, they will show you global warming. So never forget, when these communists tell you that Bush went too far, never forget that they said his father didn't go far enough. When his father threw Saddam out of Kuwait, they said he should have went to Baghdad and got Saddam. And he didn't do it. He kept his word to the American mothers, I'll have your son home safe. And he wasn't about to gamble with their lives. Now, when Bush Jr. gets word that there's a possibility of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and there's pictures of Saddam Hussein, giant pictures, paintings of Saddam Hussein standing next to a burning World Trade Center smoking a cigar, they had to take him out of the picture. It was good to go to Iraq. You know why? We couldn't trust the inspectors. We had to send our own. So we sent 60,000 inspectors. Fortunately, there were no weapons of mass destruction, but could guarantee our safety. And hunches don't count in warfare. So just remember, and in case you forgot what 911 was like, not a plane in the sky. And we were all waiting for the second shoe to fall.
A gargantuan explosion. Oh, my God, I don't believe it. The northeast corner has exploded in the most incredible explosion. Flames are flying out of the building. They're 5, 10 stories high now. Black billowing smoke. the building corner. The whole entire corner is gone.
Both World Trade Center buildings in New York City right now, heaps of rubble. At 9 o'clock this morning, a plane crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center in Lower Manhattan.
I heard the noise. I was in my office, and I heard a guy screaming. So I ran out, and everybody was saying, oh, my God, and they're in tears. They're crying. Everybody's upset.
I was just trying to make phone calls. I looked up, and I heard an explosion, and then I saw everybody in the street react first. People crying, people on the ground, everybody lying down. And then I looked up, and I saw this huge plume of smoke, and the tower just crumbling. And it just turned into a huge plume of smoke, and next thing you know, there's smoke in one tower.
Shortly after 9 o'clock, a second plane crashed into the second tower.
Oh, my God. I heard a noise coming in incredibly low. And then I was standing here looking out the window, and I knew it was going to crash, and something was going to hit the building. I dove away from the window because I thought the explosion was going to implode the windows and I'd be shattered with glass flying out. As soon as it hit, I came back and there was a ball of flame.
I'm still shaking. I saw it hit the tower and flame everywhere.
Then minutes later, President Bush in Sarasota, Florida, called those crashes an apparent terrorist attack and a national tragedy.
Today we've had a national tragedy. Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center in an apparent terrorist attack on our country. Terrorism against our nation will not stand. May God bless the victims, their families, and America.
Then an aircraft crashes near the Pentagon just outside of Washington, D.C. in Northern Virginia about an hour after those attacks in New York.
I was looking out our 12th floor windows at 1600 Wilson Boulevard in Roslyn, Virginia, and I watched this. It looked like a commuter plane, two engine, come down from the south, real low, proceed right on and crash right into the Pentagon.
Then shortly after 10 o'clock this morning, one World Trade Center tower in New York collapsed.
Lots of smoke, and then the next thing I heard, an explosion, and the building from the top, the south building, just crumbled.
Just after 10:30 this morning, the other World Trade Center tower collapsed.
We were standing there looking up at flames coming out of the building and smoke billowing out of the building and police and FBI everywhere, and suddenly we heard a rumble and the sky was full of smoke. Everybody read, crowds of people running through, I mean, shouting out to each other not to fall into the subway entrances.
So it's just truly amazing because yesterday afternoon we were sitting in the World Trade Plaza Center having lunch, and so now those two buildings are completely destroyed.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly streaming.
Freedom itself was attacked this morning by a faceless coward, and freedom will be defended. Make no mistake, the United States will hunt down and punish those responsible for these cowardly acts. We will do whatever is necessary to protect America.
There you go. There you go. Now, you want to know the difference between a Bush and President Obama bin Laden? Let's say they're both incompetent. Bush had real advisors. So Bush was cushioned by people who were totally qualified to handle the jobs at hand. Obama has nobody. He has nothing but political apparatchiks that have goals that are not simpatico to the success of the United States. George Washington, our greatest president, said, in times of peace, prepare for war. He didn't say disarm. He said, in times of peace, get ready, because he was a realist. And since the day that gunpowder was invented by the Chinese and used in firecrackers and sent to Europe, and they used it in cannonballs, man's only characteristic is to have bigger weapons of destruction. And the next war will be nuclear, and we're all invited. And the only way that we're going to be stronger than our enemies is we got to be technically ahead of them, and we've got to be forceful. And we can't become pushovers for second-rate countries. And if we got to throw people out of here to get the job done, then let it be. In Mogadishu, it was supposed to be a peace operation, bringing food to starving Somalis. And we went in there, and the Clintons played it up. They had cameras on the beaches as Navy SEALs landed to prepare the area for the troops that were flowing in. And they turned it into a Hollywood event and a joke. That's a way of spitting in your face. Spitting in the military's face, that's what that is. That's an inside joke. That's the same as having two Marines hold umbrellas at a press conference so the president doesn't get wet. I'm sure those Marines were totally humiliated by that. So, in tribute for the Marines who know how to live and how to die and have saved us and our butts, our worthless butts, for generations, we will start off with the Navy hymn for Memorial Day. Eternal Father, strong to save, we will always pray, even at execution time. When Romney was running for the presidency, they said he was a Mormon. That's how the communists work. divide and conquer. Oh, he's a Mormon. You know what those Mormons are like. Oh, he's a Christian. You know what those Christians are like. Oh, he's a black Republican. You know what they're like. Yeah. Divide and conquer. The great Soviet tactic. On a ship in the ocean sat the two leaders of the world, President Roosevelt from the United States and Winston Churchill from England, who saved England all by his great skill. And that in appreciation after the war, they voted him out of office. And now look at the mess England's in. It's not their country anymore. It is sad. And pretty soon, there are going to be a lot of English people here asking for political asylum. But on that ship that day, when those two great leaders met, okay, who had the fate of the world in their hands, this was the tune that they both stood up and sang. Dante says, the lowest form of hell is reserved for those who betray a trust. And there will be a lot of politicians down there. There are going to be a lot of people, business people, who sold out their country. A lot of politicians who sold out their country. A lot of phony politicians that vote to burn the flag and then erase the vote.
Come all you young rebels and list while I sing. For the love of one's country is a terrible thing. It banishes fear with the speed of a flame, and it makes us all part of the patriot game. My name is O'Hanlon, and I'm just gone 16. My home is in Monaghan, where I was weaned. I've learned all my life cruel England to blame, and so I'm a part of the patriot game. Barely 2 years since I wandered away, with a local battalion of the bold IRA. I'd read of our heroes, and I wanted the same, to play off my part in the patriot game. This island of ours has for long been half free. 6 counties are under John Bull's tyranny. So I gave up my boyhood to drill and to train, to play my own part in the patriot game. And now as I lie here, my body all holds, I think of those traitors who bargained and sold. I wish that my rifle had given the same to those quislings who sold out the patriot game.
There is an Irish tune called The Crappie Boy. The reason that they call him The Crappie Boy is the revolutionaries in France cut their hair a certain way, and it had a cropped look, and the Irish rebels did the same thing. The commonality that we have with this crappie boy is that the same general who hanged Nathan Hale hanged this Irish boy. About 15 years later, after the American Revolution, and he was there, he was killing other revolutionaries. And another thing that the crappie boy had in common with Nathan Hale was the crappie boy was young. He was probably 17 or 18, as was Nathan Hale. And another thing that he had in common with Nathan Hale was that both were betrayed by a cousin. You'll hear him sing in this song, my own dear cousin did me betray, and for one bare guinea, that's a coin, sold my life away. And it was somebody who turned Nathan Hale was a spy for under Washington, and he had a relative to turn him into the British. So we'll give you the crappie boy. Nathan Hale was tried and hung in an apple orchard in New York. They believe he's buried somewhere under Grand Central Station. he asked for a writing paper and a Bible when he before he was executed. They denied him the Bible, just like kids in school are being denied the Bible today. And he wrote two letters, one to a friend and one to his mother, and they tore them both up after he was hanged. The provost marshal tore them up and said no one should ever hear about how brave this guy was. And that's chilling, because after Jesus Christ was crucified, Pontius Pilate said, in 1 week no one will remember his name. And last Sunday I heard them both mention Jesus and Pontius Pilate. So Pontius Pilate has gained a notoriety through the ages. Interesting, huh? Here's the crappie boy.
It was early, early, all in the spring. The birds did whistle and sweetly sing, changing their notes from tree to tree, and the song they sang was Old Ireland Free. It was early, early, all in the night, the yeoman cavalry gave me a fright. The yeoman cavalry were my downfall, and taken was I by Lord Cornwall. As I was walking up Wexford Hill, oh, who would blame me to cry my fill? I looked behind and I looked before, but my aged mother I shall see no more. As I was walking up Wexford Street, my own first cousin I chanced to meet. My own first cousin did me betray, and for one bare guinea sold my life away. As I was mounted on the platform high, my aged father was standing by. My aged father did me deny, and the name he gave me was the Crappie Boy. It was in Dungannon this young man died, and in Dungannon his body lies. So all good people who do pass by, just drop a tear for the Crappie Boy.
We'll finish up with a Memorial Day tribute to all the troops who've served and served in the past. Anybody who served their country, if I had my way, would be one of the qualifications for office. If you never served in the military, you can't become anything. Sorry, that's the way I feel. I don't want to hear about how brave you would have been. I want to see it. I want to see it in real time. So we're going to give you this Star-Spangled Banner. And just remember, a moment of silence is not a moment of prayer. A moment of silence is a communist muzzle to keep you from calling God's name. And what did Jesus say? If you be ashamed of me before men, I will be ashamed of you before my Father. I don't want to break that mojo. I was there for you. You know what I'm saying. And I got to tell you, people that got a drug problem, and people that got a love problem, and people that are down, if you're looking everywhere but the church to go sit down and talk to God, you're missing a golden opportunity to get that good feeling you once had when you were a kid. So, happy Memorial Day. More flags and more crosses. More flags and more crosses. World War II, this was recorded. The original cast of D-Day. You hear the scratches? Listen to the ocean's roar.